Good evening and welcome to tonight's Aurora City Council meeting. The council meeting study session for April 28th, 2017. The time right now is 7 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly, council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutaback, Hanford, and Russell.
Thank you. And we heard that Councilmember Gamble would not be here this evening a couple weeks ago. Have you heard from Councilmember Kanta Davis?
I have not.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and note for the record when they come into chambers this evening. And Pledge of Allegiance, Councilmember Hanford, will you please do this?
Right.
Your right hand on your
right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The next item we have on our agenda this evening is under announcements and presentations. This is AD18-083, Downtown Monroe Association quarterly report. Ms. Worthen, please go ahead and take the photo from the front. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. What I have for you is the first quarter report for 2018, and this also serves as our newsletter for first quarter as well. It's actually 1 year since the executive director position was started March of last year. It's kind of hard to believe that a year has gone by already. And what we have on the first page here is the design of our new logo and our color scheme and fonts. And one of the things when I first started with Downtown Monroe Association that we had a lot of discussion about is really what is the image of downtown? What do we want to project and what would that look like to people when they think of Downtown Monroe? And after a lot of deliberation, a lot of different conversations working with other organizations, the city administrator, and this design team, we came up with something that we think is really really indicative of the downtown image in that it's handcrafted, it's artistic, it has that handmade feel to it. And then the color scheme is muted but still has a little pop of color. It's got some fun to it. And same with the fonts. We have some that are in sort of a scroll, some that are in block, and then we have accenting fonts to use for our advertising. So we're really happy with what we ended up with as far as the image for downtown. And then we plan to use that in different ways. We're going to create a Facebook page and have it strictly downtown Monroe information, calendars, events, and things like that. So it won't be Downtown Monroe Association, it'll just be downtown. And so one of the things we had talked about in the past was the Made in Monroe stickers, and so we're using that image with the two Swifts to use for products that are made in downtown. They can put them on the labels on the items themselves or on labels or bags. So one of the events that we had committed to with LTAC funds was called Marry Me in Monroe. We wanted something that was inclusive of all the downtown businesses, but also created some interest in other things. We've got caterers and photographers and the different service industries that we could include into this event. And so we have been working pretty much nonstop since January 1st with Mockingjay Press, who we hired to be the event coordinator. But we certainly worn off some shoe leather and knocked on a lot of doors. And we have several venues that are participating. We have businesses downtown that are participating. And then we have, inside the venues will be vendors, like I said, photographers, caterers, different people who do special events, crafts, and products. So we're well on our way with that. We have some great posters out there, some great advertising. We've had a lot of fun with it. We're getting a lot of interest, and we think this is really going to be a thing that we can expand on. We're going to just, parlay every one of our successes into our next event. And then after that, we also have a wine walk that we're working with the repurposing shops, and then we'll also have a bottle shop. And we decided to make up the Whining Bridesmaids wine walk, and we're going to be handing out all of these lovely diamond rings for them to use as tokens, and we have some beautiful sashes that we're having made, and they'll also get a cut commemorative glass. And so it should be a lot of fun. We have several local wineries and breweries involved, a chocolate shop. So we have a lot to offer for this, and it should be really fun for everyone. So then on the last page of the report is what we've got kind of going on at DMA itself. And of course, we had a change of leadership for the first time since DMA started. You know, Diane Ford, if anybody doesn't know her, really is the life of DMA. She's the one that started it. She's the one that motivated everyone, that pulled everyone in, and she stays on as vice president, which is wonderful. But we now have Patty Glenn as president of the Downtown Monroe Association. And with that, we have a different leadership style. We have a lot of plans for the year. And that's a natural progression. We're at that stage where we need to create a more professional board. We need to have more responsibilities and accountability and really involvement from everybody, and especially our committees. And so that should really really come to fruition this year as far as what we're going to be able to accomplish in those different committees. We have some new members on the board. Donna Evans, who is a regular volunteer, and then Vanessa Sanchez, who owns Jackson Hewitt. And we've done a lot of collaborating this quarter with the events that the different entities in Monroe holding throughout 2018, so that we can coordinate those so that we are enhancing each other's events. And then also so we're not overlapping, that we don't have competing events for the year. We've done some work with the Choose Monroe magazine, and then also James with the Business Recruitment, Retention, and Expansion. We've had some various other ones, including working with the City of Salton and their tourism to help them sort of get their feet wet with the Main Street project as well. So going forward, we certainly have a lot of energy behind this rebranding, and there's going to be a lot more with that. Like I said, we're going to be starting a Facebook page. We have the Main Street Conference that's the end of this month, and there's quite a large coalition of both city staff and DMA and other entities that are going to be involved in that. Last year we went to Ellensburg, it was wonderful. This year we should be able to cover pretty much all of the tours and all of the classes that they're going to be able to offer, and then we can sit down afterwards and we can compare notes, and after Teresa compiled a beautiful report from that, and so we'll be hopefully looking forward to that again sometime in May. We have, of course, our Mary Lee Monroe and Wine Walk, and then we also the Swift Walk is definitely a project that we want to have pretty well ready to go this summer. And so we have a few more birds to sell, about 10, which will be, once we get past a lot of the detail work with Mary Ann Monroe, then that's going to be my focus, is working on that. We also have some additional wine walks scheduled throughout the summer so that we can, like I said, just go from one to the next. When one sells out, we can start working on the next one. So it should be a pretty fun summer. Then we also have just sort of our work plan, and I wanted to touch bases on a few of those things because we did have some benchmarks. And one of the things was that administration. We certainly have, we had our elections and a change of leadership. And that's on tap. We had the communications and relations, and we're about where we wanted to be with that, with all of the details that we've had to do with these two events. These are the things that we really, and after we have the conference, because we did get a great deal of information from that, then we'll be able to move forward with our communications. We've been working very closely with the businesses downtown, doing a monthly meeting, and that's done worlds good to try and get us to coordinate on things, and I think we'll be able to keep that momentum of having that monthly meeting with them. We usually have it on a Friday morning before they open their doors, and that works great, and we're trying to collaborate a lot more on their calendars and some of the ways we can always work together. Probably, I'm just going to skip through a couple of these, but some of the other work plan items that had to do with downtown and the organization of some of the buildings and information and empty spaces, with James on board now, working with him, is going to make that a really easy process. And so we look forward to that being enhanced by being a part of the team. And then, of course, walking tours, the same thing. We're hoping to be able to, we had talked about doing some walking tours, and now we'll be able to really respond to that. We'll have some great data to work from and a lot of contacts and networking already made. And then the only thing that we're really kind of putting on hold at this point is our membership drive. And we do want to expand our membership, but up until this point, it hasn't really been a critical part of the function of DMA. And I think now that we have really established these relationships with a lot of the businesses downtown and the community, and we've really shown what value we play in that, I think it'll be a lot easier. And then also with starting a Facebook page and having some of those networks that if they want to be a part of that, being part of the membership as well, I think it's pretty reasonable, and I think it'll be a much easier probably in the second quarter to start looking at how we're going to expand our membership. But we kind of have to go, especially with the marketing plan and all of these things, at the pace that's appropriate for downtown, because we're really not at a point where we want to throw out the red carpet and say, everybody come to Mountain to Monroe, we've got all these things going on, it's fantastic, and not be able to deliver what everybody's expectations are. So we really are focusing on those things that we do and do well. And I have to say, these classes, the painting classes and stamping classes and things like that have really taken off, and people come from all over for those, and they really enjoy them, they come back. And so those are the kind of things that we really want to emphasize right now, and then try and roll that into coming early and having dinner or having lunch, staying and shopping, and then looking at some of the other services that are in town. So that's pretty much our first quarter.
Sounds good. Ms. Hunt, would you like to say anything as the president?
No, just that we're really excited to have James coming out next month and talk to us a little bit more about the database that he's putting together and how that information might help feed us as far as developing strategic relationships. We've spent, like Joey mentioned, a considerable amount of time with feet on the pavement, sometimes in high heels. I haven't planned that as well as I should have. But it's been great to really get to know the businesses downtown and the owners, or the tenants, depending on where we are and how they're being impacted by the issues that the city's addressing. So we're just really, really excited. But I think, like Joey mentioned, Marion Monroe and the Wine Walk have taken a lot of time to put together, and that we're really excited with the number of vendors and venues that we have. And especially when you compare that to some of the other communities around us and where they started, we've got a really great start, and we're hearing really good things. I don't know if you noticed the Tea Palace sign that popped up in the old St. John's building. Again, just kind of showed up as a venue, and we kind of heard a little bit of murmur into a great run that might have been pushed timeline-wise because they heard about this Mary Lee and Monroe event coming up. So, yeah, very exciting to see some of that. So thank you for giving me a moment. And of course, eternally grateful to the work that Joey's been doing and the amount of time and effort on top of a full-time job that she's put into this position. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate all the work that DMA is doing, the involvement with the businesses in downtown. I do appreciate these quarterly reports also. I think it helps us keep tabs on how you're doing, and I know that you're working with staff to make certain that, again, council members and me, to make certain we can plug in when appropriate to be part of that. So thank you both. Thank you to the board, please. Councilor Hanford?
Yes, just for what you said, thank you to everyone for all your work. It's very much appreciated.
Any questions or any other thoughts from council members? Thank you. And please look direct to Councilor Camp, Mayor Chambers, 703, Councilor Davis, 710. Great, the next item on the agenda then is public comment. This is the time set aside for members of public to speak to the city council on any issue related to the city of Monroe. Except any positive judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. Is that consistent with that sign issue? We don't have our timer going, so I'll just let you know as we're coming up first we've got 3 minutes. And Commissioner Hubble. Sure. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Do you need name and address, sir?
Yes, please.
Bridget Tuttle, 13511 Boulder Ridge Road. Winter Road 98272. And I hate public speaking, so I like to write down what I'm going to say. And I hope it's not boring, but bear with me. This is regarding traffic impact fees. So an issue that has recently been brought to my attention regarding change of use in a business space is of concern to me. Right now, our zoning code includes a matrix for calculating the cost of traffic impact fees based on the change of use that I think needs to be examined because it is a contradiction to our city comprehensive plan. According to our comp plan, Historic Main Street, which is the red area on the zoning map, has a stated purpose to have a high concentration of retail, dining, and entertainment functions. We have decided as a city, through community involvement, long hours of discussion and brainstorming, and by recommendation by the Planning Commission and adoption by the City Council, of this plan to promote, encourage, foster, and develop these types of businesses in our downtown core in an effort to achieve the comp plan goal of having a thriving downtown. With this in mind, we are looking at more than just a handful of existing business spaces on and around Main Street that are currently in a legal non-conforming position. Once these businesses move or close down, our comprehensive plan requires that these spaces open with a different type of business, and they will begin a change of use process that brings them into compliance with the comp plan. So the short version is that we as a city are wanting existing service-based and by appointment-only businesses to become restaurant and retail spaces that attract pedestrians through window displays and provide window shoppers opportunities to go in and out of shops as people move down the street and the ability to grab a bite to eat or get a coffee to walk with. So when we look at the fee schedule for traffic impact regarding change of use, we may not understand what kind of burden we are putting on small business owners unless we walk through the process a little bit. So I have an example. There's an empty space on South Lewis Street that is about 3,000 square feet. It was formerly a retail space, but there is an interest in turning it into a restaurant slash entertainment type of business. The build out for that use is about $160,000, with electrical, plumbing, heat, air conditioning, commercial kitchen, and fixtures are all factored in. And that's a lot of money for a regular person looking to open a restaurant in Monroe, which is what we say that we want. A small business owner goes through a pre-application process and receives feedback from city officials and the fire department. Following the meeting, there's a letter that is sent out to the applicant with some input and recommendations. And at the end of the letter, there was a comment, or there is generally a comment, that there may be some additional fees, for example, traffic impact fees, which sound reasonable. But when the applicant comes to City Hall to make the application, they'll need to pay those associated fees. And on a 3,000 square foot space, which was formerly retail and changing to restaurant, the fee is $27,000. Which is the difference between what was already paid for the retail space and then the fee for the restaurant, and that comes out to be $9 per square foot. So if the space is changing from a service to a restaurant, the fee is quite a bit higher.
Ms. Bella, do you guys to wrap up?
Okay. Sorry. I'll skip down to the end. I wouldn't know about this except it's come up before with a coffee shop downtown, and I've been contacted by a local realtor regarding some of our empty spaces in which we have an opportunity for a new restaurant. So between Planning Commission and the Economic Advisory Board, as well as my own desire to continue growing businesses in Monroe, I feel strongly that these fees are out of balance with what we're trying to do as a community. So thank you.
Thank you. So since those are written comments, since you read from something in writing, is that something that you would like to provide to the clerk so that she can
sure.
Your
if
comments?
You ignore my scratchy scratches on there.
Alternatively, you can certainly email your comments to.
I'll give it to Elizabeth. That's fine. And I apologize, but I have to. I have an event at the Herald to see next, so I can get back over there.
Thank you. I'm going to hang out for 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to keep your Yes, I need my keys to drive.
Don't throw them.
Don't throw them.
Thank you.
The next person on the agenda to speak this evening is Kara Larson.
Hello, my name is Tara Larson, and I'm at 25212 78th Street Southeast, Monroe, Washington, 98272. I'm actually piggybacking on what Bridget had to say today. I know a few of you and become really involved in the community over the last couple years. The building that she was talking about and the business she was just mentioning, the restaurant, is actually the business I helped to establish here in Monroe. So obviously investing a significant amount of my capital into the community is important. Elevating Monroe is important to me. My husband's a police officer here, and so we're heavily involved with the community and want to see it continue to grow. And it's good to see everybody so passionate about the historic district. I'd love to see that restored. And just something beautiful, something people want to stay here and enjoy. I see a lot of people that leave the area to go to Snohomish and Duval and Woodville for these wineries and nice restaurants, and I want that to be something that they can participate here in town. And hopefully people in Woodville and Duval and Snohomish will want to come to Monroe for those experiences. So I'm just hoping to eventually get to some sort of resolution, actually not eventually, kind of urgently get to a resolution. I do have several different phases of my business plan that are already approved, and this is kind of halting that process. I'd like to open as soon as possible, and so I'm hoping that there is resolution soon about this traffic impact fee, and whether that be a process that I get submitting some form of a waiver or a grievance or something like that that I can get to you guys, so that way we can start bringing more business into Monroe, especially the historic district, and just getting Monroe on the same page and elevating it. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.
Where is this building?
It's on 212 South Lewis Street, so it's the old hydroponics building right across from KB&Q.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there anybody else who'd like to speak to the city council this evening?
Just quickly.
Just please.
Okay. How are you? Okay.
Where are you in charge?
Mike Buse, trying to remember my home address. I just bought it. Basin Road. I think it's 32801 138th Street in Sullivan. I'm just kind of reiterating what her and Bridget said, and I'm part of the Economic Development Board and obviously the Chamber President. And although I haven't pulled my chamber board, I think I know them very well. And I think that we're all in here because we're trying to build community, and it's a big deal to all of us. Otherwise, we wouldn't sit here on Tuesday nights. We wouldn't be council people. We wouldn't be chambers. I wouldn't be on the two or three or four boards that I'm on. If we're going to mandate and we're going to try to build the town a certain way, and we're going to say we want these businesses down here, and we'd like to see restaurants and retail so people stay here in our town, or they come to stay in our town and have a weekend like people do for Snohomish, to go and spend a whole weekend there and stay in their hotels and eat in their restaurants, okay, that's what we all want, I assume. And if we're going to do that, I think we do need to revisit when somebody is going to open something that we want in our town, that we're saying, hey, we want you to have this type of business to be in this location, and it's benefiting what we do. I think we do need to, really, as a council, I think you need to look at these traffic impact studies and say what the revenue is going to be future, more so than what do we need right this second. I mean, whether it's a waiver or it's some, you guys are way better at this than I am, but some kind of a procedure that says, hey, if it's 20 grand, maybe we do a waiver to get the kind of businesses we want in, like we did with the permits, or even maybe it's 20 grand and throughout the process we find some way of recouping that money, or we just let them invest in our town. So I don't know, I just think that we need to, if we're going to mandate what kind of businesses we want to better our community, we need to revisit that process as far as in those specific areas. Let's get them built, let's get the people in there, let's get the type of businesses that we want in there, and worry about all the other crap later. That's about some of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bruce. Excuse me, Mayor.
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
Third up on the same topic, so I'll ask a question.
Yes, sir.
And get stuck.
So is this mitigation case?
Yeah, no. So is this mitigation you're looking for, is it citywide or directly?
So it's the traffic impact study that's the killer, because I mean, I know another business that was going to move into downtown too, and it was another $20,000 traffic impact study. Literally, they moved to a different city, and it's just because It's that thing that comes at the end that when you're getting ready to open a business, right, and you see that there's little fees at the bottom that we all expect at the end of the process, and then they go to the bank, they get their loan, they start buying their equipment, they start getting the facility, they get everything done, and then they see this number that's the oh my god number, it's $20,000 more, and it's literally a deal breaker.
So is it, and just swatting out so we're clear, if you're not thinking citywide, you really are just thinking downtown.
I think we're going to mandate that we want to build our city in this way. And, you know, just from the DMA, and we're trying to make the DMA, they're doing an amazing job. But, you know, let's not limit what they can draw into our town. If we're going to say we want restaurants and retail in this specific area, let's work as a group to help them. You already give them free permits down there to do something in the downtown. That's something they don't get. Let's work on those traffic impact studies to invite them in there. Let's get a nice, vibrant downtown built and let the future people get on the piggyback of the successful downtown and let them pay some impact studies, you know, impact fees. But yes, in those specific areas that we're mandating, we want these kind of businesses, I think we need to say, if you do this kind of business, we're going to cut you a break.
Thank you. I'm sorry for putting you on the spot.
You're fine.
Like I said, you're third person on the stage.
Sure.
I have to ask your question.
Yes.
Councilmember Kovac.
So is it a study you're required to do, or is it the impact fee?
It's a fee.
Okay.
And it's kind of the hidden fee at the bottom of the form that says these fees will apply. You know, it's like the water bill or this or that. And then they say there's 20 more grand. Go ahead.
And then it's for a change of use when there's a change of use.
Correct.
Yes. Okay.
And for me, retail, what do they sell t-shirts in their restaurant? Now they're retail also. Does that use change? I mean, the level of use change is a big deal too. So retail is retail. I mean, to me, not to you, I know that's a slippery slope, but thank you so much. Anything else?
Thank you very much. All right, anybody else like to speak to the council this evening? All right, let's go ahead and move on to council member reports. Council members, do you have any reports this evening? Okay.
Well, I'm just going to suggest maybe based on the comments, you'll be planning on bringing this back.
Okay, so when I was going to go ahead and ask that question.
Yeah.
The question that I would have would be this. We brought to council, remember when Sharina Beans wanted to open downtown, I proposed to council that we make a modification to the code. The council had adopted an emergency ordinance that made a modification to the code relative to transportation impact fees. Then went, as it's required to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission then, from what the council adopted, increased the bar, if you will. They placed additional requirements on there that put the impact fees back up about as high as they were previously. And adopting that. So I think that given what you heard tonight, it makes total sense to have it come back for conversation with council again. I think whether you as a body would prefer to do it in the P4 committee, your next P4 committee meeting, if I'm looking at this correctly, that's April 24th at 6 p.m. or bring it back to the body of council for a conversation and study session. Those are the two options. And I would be supportive of having a conversation again on this. But again, it's up to the council.
I think it's important to bring it back. I would prefer it come to the whole body. I don't sit on that committee, so I'd like to see that. Like to see the matrix and can't wrap my head around it right now. It's not in front of me, but really look at that matrix and look, you know, what is the rationale between change of use from a retail to a restaurant, and looking at that data, you know, so that would be helpful.
The conversation this evening has been really limited to the transportation impact fees for downtown businesses. And it's not only based upon the change of use, it's the PM peak trips, right? So a restaurant generates different PM peak trips than a retail store that's open all day long.
Sure.
In addition, though, to the traffic impact fees affecting the downtown, we're also experiencing that traffic impact fees are potentially affecting, you know, other parts of the community as well. And so rather than just look at it from a very narrow perspective and not look at it from the big picture perspective, my preference would be if we're going to bring something back to you, then let's take a look at what incentive packages look like for those that are looking to move into our industrial area, and then what does it look like in addition for North Cal State too.
I agree.
So if these are areas that you're really focused in on as being your economic development areas, recognize though that, you know, from the pure standpoint of doing the math around traffic impact fees, anything that's not paid for through the people that are coming into the community and developing these spaces has to be paid for by your general taxpayers. Right. And so I think that's where the challenge comes in, and just want to make sure that everybody's clear about the trade-offs.
Councilmember Rasmussen?
Just given the urgency or some emergency of this matter, I would say to bring it back to the council sooner rather than later, this is closest to the meeting.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and look at the agenda and make certain that we can bring this back before the council at one of our upcoming sessions. And you would like to have that brought forward sooner than later. So we'll see what we can do this time. You still have the floor, Councilmember.
Okay. Different topic. Councilmember reports.
I'm going to go ahead and recognize first Councilmember Kent. Is it the same topic?
Yes, and Councilmember report.
Okay.
Just want to make sure I was in the line.
I'm going to go ahead and acknowledge Councilmember Rasmussen since you put yours up as before his, and then Councilmember Kent. Councilmember Rasmussen.
I just want to give a big shout out to our Monroe Police Department and also Ms. Deborah Knight. Last week was spring break. The Boys and Girls Club had a huge week-long event planned where the kids tried to solve the mystery of the missing Easter Bunny. And 3 days out of the 5 days, the Monroe Police Department came over and engaged with the kids and helped them solve clues, look for clues, look over evidence of the missing Easter Bunny and everything. And when the villain unfortunately had to call out sick, Ms. Knight graciously stepped in and helped us out. And it was a lot of fun. And again, I want to thank our police department, Ms. Knight, for helping out the kids at the club and participating. It was a lot of fun and a good experience.
Any pictures?
What's that?
Any pictures?
They're
Facebook photos, sure.
None of Ms. Knight. Although one of the kids that saw the umbrella recognized it at the groundbreaking ceremony.
That's impressive.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
But then also that the groundbreaking ceremony at Skyward Park was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Mary definitely held your own with 15 kids trying to look over your nose. So well done. And looking forward to having that part completed.
Thank you. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. Well, first off, did you find it? The Easter Bunny?
Oh, I was the Easter Bunny.
Either way. Well, now you gave away your secret identity, so that's not going to be there. I
figured it out now.
I don't have a report, but I have a request. So we're, 2 months into this YMCA budget thing? Right? So we're about 2 months into it. Can we get some reports on usage and who signed up and how often it's been used?
They're required to give half year,
well, we have to make a decision. Okay. We can get a little information for that, just so we know that's all right. Thank you.
Anybody else with a report this evening? Okay, let's go ahead and move to city administrator update and mayor's update.
For the extended agenda on April 17th, we see we have a long list of items, and that's partly going to be essential to April 3rd meeting. And on that note, I want to just briefly mention that we will be coming back to you with a proposal to actually switch the future meetings to have the
second and fourth be your regular meetings, and your first and third be your study sessions, because we have a number of regular meetings that would be canceled starting with July 4th. And so rather than end up with a big agenda like we had this month, we think that would serve us all better. So we'll be back in front of you on April 24th with that proposal. Also, your April 24th meeting is supposed to be a study session, but we do have one action item. So we will have a motion at your next meeting on April 17th, and setting that as a regular and extended session meeting on the 24th. So just a couple of shifts around in order to get a city business done.
Any questions or insight?
Yes.
That's great.
Thank you. It was my understanding that even during the study session, we could take action.
You can.
So why did we change our meeting for the 24th?
In a preponderance of caution, there should be a third.
Preponderance of caution.
Yeah.
I probably said your exact words as you said that.
I probably say them verbatim.
Yeah. He usually says an abundance of caution. But maybe he's changed to preponderance. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. As for me, just in the room this week, you'll see it, some of the updates of some of the things that I was involved in last week. And yes, I do thank the director from Boys and Girls Club for bringing over the roughly 15 kids. That was fun having them there. And so thank you for doing that. This week, just something to point out, we do have a town hall meeting that Senator Wagner and Representative Kessler are holding. I believe it is at the library this time, 10:30, and that's on Saturday. So
fire station training.
Fire station training. Yeah. Okay. Okay. We, you know, that makes sense. It said fireball. She said fire hall. Okay. I got it. It was a typo. I was trying to figure out. Yeah, that's great. I didn't drink it, but I knew I recognized it.
Fireball night.
There's a demo meeting, they're drinking Fireball. Okay. That meeting will be on Saturday, and it's an open public meeting. You're welcome to attend. Certainly, if you have a forum that's going to attend, we would like to know that. So, if you just let us know, we can do a notice of that. And I think that's it for me for now. We'll go ahead and move down to discussions. And please note, unless there's objection to it, I'd like to switch to discussion items. We have our consultant here this evening for the second item. So unless there's objection, we're going to go ahead and flip the two. AB 18-085, revised North Texas site plan, will be the first one. Any objection? All right, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to that in a second.
Thank you. I do just want to introduce our consultant team very quickly. They're conferring with one another. So I've got Bob Stowe on the end there, probably the city manager for both Buffalo and Sonoma Creek at one time. And then we have Rich Peterson and Chris Peterson, both of Lee and Associates. And if the council remembers kind of where we ended up, the last time we had a property sold at the Northfield site back in 2013, Walmart project was closed. And so what the council asked me to do when I came on board with the mayor was to kind of refresh the North Kelsey site. And so we brought on board Mr. Stowe and then Chris and Rich Peterson to assist us with kind of updating the North Kelsey plan. And that's what we're here to talk about this evening is what does that refresh look like, and to get your approval on the refresh in order to move forward. Because there are a couple of things that we need to discuss if we're going to make this change happen. So one of the things we want to review just really quickly is just the changing retail market and Monroe's place in that market. And one of our consultants, Tiffany Connell, is kind of the expert in the retail market, and unfortunately she's come down with that flu that's been going around, so she wasn't able to be here this evening, but we think we can probably cover this sufficiently. The benefits and risks, we're talking about adding multifamily housing. We had a brief discussion with council about this back at the end of March, about where should more density occur in downtown and in the community as a whole, and one of the areas that we talked about was the North Kelsey area. Finally, the location and type of proposed retail spaces. So if we're going to be addressing kind of the change that's happening right now in the retail market and the addition of housing, just where on the North Kelsey site should that retail be placed and how much of it should there be? Finally, the vertical and horizontal mixed use. So at our meeting on March 27th, there was a long discussion about, you know, what about what we've seen lately with mixed-use buildings, right, where you see the retail on the lower floor and then you see housing above that retail, and some of the outcomes that we're seeing as a part of that, what we're calling the vertical mixed-use versus the horizontal. So that vertical mixed-use hasn't been all that successful. We have a little bit of it proposed in this plan, but not to the extent that you've seen in some other areas, perhaps. And then finally, relocating the Village Green. So one of the things that the community weighed in on pretty heavy during the original development of the North Kelsey Plan was the idea of a Village Green gathering space. So where do people go, and how do we ensure that people are actually coming down and spending time in this retail space? And so we've done our best to try and preserve a location of a Village Green area adjacent again to the housing in order to ensure that the people that are living in the community get the biggest bang for their buck out of that space. So if the council approves what we're proposing this evening, it is just the first step in kind of a multiple set of actions that need to take place in order to actually make this change a reality. And the number one step that we need to take would be changing the code to allow the use or the inclusion of residential in the North Kelsey site. And that actually has to go through your planning commission, and that goes through a process and then comes back to the city council. We need to have consultant contracts to evaluate the proposed zoning code changes, because the addition of residential into this area wasn't originally considered as a part of the CEPA determination that was made and then the subsequent environmental impact statement. So we have to go back and do that work in order to include that in the proposed CEPA. And then finally, a traffic study and the CEPA checklist, and then updating the programmatic EIS. So remember, one of the things that you've done in order to provide a lower bar for development to come onto the site is you're doing the environmental impact work first, right? So your developer doesn't have to do that work. And that takes away some of the risk, but it also then means that the city's going to have some costs. And so those costs are included in your agenda materials this evening. The last thing that we're going to need to do, and this will be ongoing following your action this evening, is a pro forma, and that's what Rich and Chris Peterson are going to be responsible for, is putting together this pro forma, and it's basically putting the numbers together to ensure that at the end of the day, a developer can actually come in and do the project, and it's going to be marketable, because we don't want to put a product out there that can't be sold, or that won't make a profit for a developer. So we're going to be doing that number crunching, and at the end, that's what's going to help determine the price offering or the minimum price that we would be able to take in order to successfully close the deal. And that gets back to your traffic impact fee conversation earlier this evening, because traffic impact fees for this site are high, and in order to make it pencil out, somebody's going to have to be able to pay those fees. So any questions about the direction that we're going to be talking about this evening? Do you want to add anything, Bob, to the conversation?
Well, Deborah provided an excellent summary. I just say that the steps that are listed in the screen, the five or six steps, are really there to attempt to make this property that much more attractive for prospective users in development. And so that's why we're asking that you consider residential as a component to the tiered place. I think you've got a nice site for development, but retail is a difficult proposition these days. In the last several years, as you know, it's really been reshaped by technology, and so we're just finding it more and more difficult to try to get the type of retail users that maybe traditionally was envisioned when that site was purchased by you, or maybe the initial site plans and master plans were developed. So we're trying to move forward and develop a new brand, a new site plan that again will gain some traction and hopefully some interest in the development community. And in terms of a time frame, we're probably a month away from kind of really being able to tell an effective story, a compelling story for others to become interested and possibly present offers to the team. And once that site plan is approved by you, we'll be able to show some illustrative drawings to prospective purchasers. Again, just showing what's possible on the site with advertising that this would be, you know, a flexible site, it could be horizontal mixed use, could be vertical mixed use. We're simply showing a potential that could be developed and really sort of putting the vision out there the city has for this, and we think that'll be effective.
Questions? Councilor, come back.
What's the time frame
from start to finish, like in weeks, years, what does it look like?
Well, again, we think we'll be sort of on the street or on the market within another month or sometime in June. Then it's just dependent upon how successful we are in terms of tracking investment, if it's one purchaser or multiple purchasers. Purchase sell agreements, if we, you know, we'll have a letter of intent that we find someone who's interested in one or more of the parcels, and that could take a month or more. Purchase sell agreements, depending upon the complexity of them, could take 60 days and 90 days to get sort of worked out. And then it's just a matter of when those developments close. Typically, development doesn't like to close until they've gone through all their entitlement work. So you could have 6 months, 8 months, and then you have closing at the end of that period of time, and then development would occur. So if we're successful in finding someone by the end of the year, then you're probably maybe another year, for example, for closing, and then maybe construction that following year.
So you're doing, you're advertising the property and gaining interest concurrently at the same time with it going through its process, going to planning committee and all that?
We would be. And the way we would frame that is that the city is moving forward with the entitlement process or amending the EIS so that the environmental work and the environmental determination have been taken care of. But we think that'll coincide by the time that you get that process. We're not going to be so quick that we're going to be jumping out in front of it that we'll be executing the purchase and sale agreement, for example, before that process is done.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the contingent.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions before we move on? Anything
else that Rich want to add?
No, I think getting out in front of the public was a little optimistic in the unless we have a very clear path that the planning commission is in full support and will be, you know, how do we tell people what cost might be or what it's going to look like? They're going to want to invest any time until they know they have a clear pathway they can move down. So, with the exception of it might be easier on the retail users because we don't really have the same issues. Sorry, so, for example, the red boxes you see here, I think, have about a year faster timeline, probably, than the multifamily. And the multifamily would take, you know, probably a 6 month process with the city, I would guess, just by looking at that. But you might correct me if it's a lot faster. So that's a rough order of magnitude. Then we would get through that. And before I think we'd have any real interest, other than, gee, let me know when it's available, I'd be interested, you know, type position from the multifamily mixed use developer. On the different retail users, we think that there's a few in the marketplace now that we could get interest going either this year or the next year if they do their physical planning.
Councilor Kemp,
thank you. Are we, this may be early, we may be carrying this on a little bit further, but are we requiring residential in these locations, or is it the builder will have the option?
No, this would be simply the option. It wouldn't be a requirement.
Okay,
so if you had a developer or someone wanted to come and put like all commercial development,
that's
code would allow for that. So we're just allowing an opportunity for mixed use.
Okay, so are we only specific settings? Or throughout the whole building area?
Right.
So I'm not asking the right question, let me know.
Yeah, no, that's a reasonable question.
Yes, that's two questions. So, first, on the first question, the reason we're going through this process is the nature of retail. The land's been sitting there for a minute. Monroe's over retailed in a general sense today. I'm speaking for Tiffany now. I wish she were here because she'd do a much more elegant job. She's much better with chat and she talks better. But short of all that, as we had our internal discussions, there's really only about three or four users that we can identify, types of users. Now, there might be 10 users, but four of them compete with each other. So you're only getting one. All right. So we've really identified absolutely no more than this red already on the main boxes. and we have good ideas of who those people could be and we think would be interested in this area and be good for the community. And that might be a total of 15 users, but it's going to end up being, you know, total 5 that we've done, and many of them won't go. One guy goes, the other guy won't go. And that would be direct competitors. It could be just overlap a little bit. So we kind of looked at that and kind of tried to adjust the amount of retail we're building here to what we think the market could absorb. Okay, and then that leaves the rest of it saying, what could we do that would add some vibrance and that is a driving force in the marketplace housing today, and that isn't going in the opposite direction like some retail. So that's where we took a look at the rest of the property and said, how could we integrate housing, which would begin to take advantage of some of the restaurants and the theaters and the other things around the area.
Right.
And then what might be, you know, fast forward 15 years, 10 years, whatever, if you looked across the street of those yellow boxes, and not on your frontage of your highway, because, you know, I don't know, there's a planned bypass, but they just put that whole ramp coming down in there, so whether that planned bypass ever happens or not, I think I won't be on this earth to see that. So, but you could easily see how half of that, you know, keep the frontage along the highway still in the automobile, you know, quick stop, whatever it is, kind of usage, but you take the other half of that, and as time goes on, those buildings become a little bit more functionally obsolescent, you could have more mixed-use retail. Mixed-use housing go in there, you'd have a very nice corridor that would begin to look like Main Street in downtown Bellevue. Okay. If you've been through there lately and seen the, you know, 4 to 6 stories of multifamily and some good retail and it's a good little community. So that could be what it's building towards and driving towards in a much larger scale. So right now I know we've just really talked about zoning on this one piece, but we might look at whether that should overlap into, you know, a little bit wider swath or not. If not now, maybe in a future one.
Yes, I have one more question, if that's okay. So Village Green, we're trying to decide which one it is. I see two screeners. That's Village Green?
Yeah, this is the retention detention facility that's in place now.
Right, I thought we were going to fill that in and sell it.
That's what this piece is right here.
All of that piece, but yep. The other piece is going
to be. So both of them have retention facilities on them now,
right?
So this one remains, and then a portion of a retention detention for this building here is actually underneath the building itself.
Right. Okay, so the Village Green part of this development would be the responsibility and cost of the city. Right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, that's it. Thank you.
Anything further?
Good. Okay. So you have hard copies of the proposal in front of you, and I have to say this is the first time I've ever been through a site development process, so it was really fascinating for me personally to understand kind of all of the criteria and conditions that need to be met in order to put something like this together. It looks fairly easy, but I have to say that Makers did a great job at actually making it reality, and by that I mean that all of the parking spaces that you see here, those all correspond to the city's existing requirements. In fact, I think we actually reduce them for the multifamily. We go from 2 parking spaces per unit.
So we're going to propose 1.5.
So that'll be another one of those changes that gets made. So you can see up here in the corner on your hard copy, which is a smaller print. But you can see the square feet of retail, the square feet of residential, 202 units are being proposed for the residential piece. And then all of the parking spaces are calculated to ensure that we can actually adequately park everybody on site at the reduced parking space requirement, which I think is reasonable, kind of given this particular location. So the red areas that you see here are actually the pull-outs of the building, and this is the little bit of retail that we're going to incorporate in with the residential. So this goes to this is the vertical mixed retail that we're talking about. And we had it just here on the corner, which makes sense, again, trying to understand, you know, how people are going to be driving around and parking and actually using this space. And then because it's across the street from the park, the idea is that some of the park users will drive some of this retail as well. This spot here is the spot that we're currently working on purchase and sale agreement. So this is parcel 2A, right? And that'll be coming back in front of council on the 17th.
Is that the delay?
This one here?
Right, this is the one that there's like a 2-year delay, the rural one. Is this?
Yes, this corner lot right here. And then we've got another piece of mixed-use retail that's on this corner again, adjacent to the park. So trying to drive, you know, both the used coffee shops, small restaurants, you know, those types of uses is what we anticipate going in these spaces. And then, as mentioned earlier by Rich, then we cluster the remaining spaces with the retail that we think that we can fill adjacent to the Lowe's building. And then just this little spot of retail here, figuring out some sort of coffee stand drive-through location. So any questions about how we're building it up?
Who drives a half the car?
People are assuming some people are only driving one car instead of every family having two cars.
So you're going to buy an apartment, a favorite apartment, and pay extra for the second spot or something? Okay, I buy an apartment, I get an apartment, and I've got 1.5 parking spots.
Right, so some apartments only have one person.
Yeah, it's an average, so there's some smaller units, there's some studios, there's some bedrooms, there's some two bedrooms.
So you can assign the other size of the apartment?
Yes. Okay. Or you rent them or whatever, but you know, they'd be available.
And where you have the rent space on the corner for commercial? The idea is to have coffee shops or something that the apartments would use, and the rest of the underneath is now the parking.
Yeah, so most of the first floor is covered parking, and then a portion, whether it would be right there, we relocated to a different location. I think we aren't that far really down the line yet, because there's lots of discussion to go on. These have been coming out pretty quick. But in general, it's a reasonable amount, we think, of retail. We wouldn't want to see that whole first floor be retail. It would just sit vacant, like you see so many of those. But there's enough where they could be a nail salon or a small, small restaurant, those type of things that work well there, and maybe or maybe not have a playoff of the open space.
So I think Anthony did the instructional review, renting person.
Oh no, the developer usually does the tenant improvements. I mean, if we own the building, we have the space, we'll give them so many dollars and we'll do it. They may spend some more money, because sometimes if it's a restaurant, they may spend $100 a square foot and give them $40 a square foot, but things like that.
And this big red one here, yeah, does that take part of Lowe's parking lot?
So the numbers there, so Lowe has a parking easement. Lowe has a lot of things going on.
Right here.
Lowe's restricts the uses you can put there, so there can't be restaurants or anything else that might want to go there. And somehow compete with their parking. But so they've got an easement over some of that, but we have, with the way that's designed right now, we own and control what we need, which is 5 stalls per 1,000 square feet of new retail, and Lowe's still has their stalls.
There is a water and sewer line that cuts Kitty Corner across here too. Originally we had some buildings that were clustered over on this end, but then they ended up right on top of this easement, so we had to move them back over to this corner.
And that plan's going to take reworking the easements of Lowe's for ingress and egress too, so.
Anything further, Councilmember Sherman? Thank you, Councilmember Kovac.
So I would assume that with the mixed use with the residential and the commercial with the type one building, that there's obviously limitations on what commercial we put in there. Can you just tell me more, a little bit more about what that? You mentioned nail salons, but kind of what's the...
Generally, well, only if their locations would be based on your code, and then whatever you wanted to restrict in terms of your purchase and sale. So generally, whatever you would think of is allowed within your downtown today or in that location today as commercial.
And are those easy to fill?
Well, there's 50,000 square feet that we're trying to fill, so it's going to be a challenge. And again, we don't want to sell to someone where they just have a dark box, even if there is residential above it. So we have to find the right purchaser, the right developer, and the right business that will fit there within Monroe's market.
Yeah, that's what I was just trying to get at. That when we have residential, it would seem that certain residential wouldn't want to buy there if there's a certain commercial business near them or by them. or you don't find that to be a problem?
No, and these wouldn't, number one, these probably wouldn't be condominiums. Nobody would buy them.
Okay.
Probably be apartments.
Apartments.
Yes. Condominiums aren't really a very popular thing today to do for a lot of different reasons, and apartments are, so it makes a lot of sense. It's more of a transient housing, meaning not transient, but you know, it's not.
Yeah.
It's more affordable housing. And we don't, and you just mentioned 50,000 square feet, but really, well, we have a very small amount of retail and actual space.
And so determining that the residential would work here as far as rental,
yeah.
You know, do we do a feasibility study to know that we have renters here?
Yes.
I mean, is that up to the developer to kind of do that? Or are we doing that to show them that, hey, this would be a good...
Well, both will occur.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just a way to make sure that if someone needs convincing or someone needs to show, you know, we need to be able to articulate the vision more in terms of numbers, that's what the performance, that's what sort of the site plan and the renderings hopefully will be able to do.
Okay.
But right, I mean, your leases, whether it's commercial or residential property, has to support new construction. And the extent that they don't in this area, then you're going to have trouble developing, which is one of the reasons why we've also increasing the heights of the 541, which is, you know, wood frame structure over concrete.
But that's what our performer will do when we go through our numbers, is we'll take a look at what the grants you can think we can get here based on comps and other things, but then there may not even be a good comp, you know, because there really isn't anything like this
right
here. So you've got to go to some other areas and compare it, and you've got to see what other housing costs are here. And then we'll probably just take it to the developer and say, how do you guys think about this? Because, you know, they're the ones that are going to actually put the money into it, right?
Right.
On a very preliminary basis, some that we know well, and they say, yeah, I think that's a good idea to do that flyer. No, that's not, sort, you know. That's what
we're figuring out. And the first of all, it's not just for the developer's point of view, but for yours too, as the seller trying to determine what is the value of the land.
Right.
Once you take into account everything the developer has to build, the impact fees, the latecomers fees, back below, all those things have to get calculated in order to determine what that land value should be.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. So the red, that's the big red, the two big red squares that are across from those. Well, that right there. Is there any restrictions in that agreement with Lowe's about residential?
That doesn't have any residential in it, but no, I don't think there is anything with Lowe's.
So,
but I'm not sure.
Okay, so I'm just pretend that we go ahead and do this, but that little big red square stays empty. Logistically, it would be possible to say, hey, let's do more residential right there. Let's do another 541 right in that same area.
You could. You want to make sure you program that into your EIS, which looks at the impacts associated with that residential. One of the reasons why, I think, 236 units were chosen and an approximate amount was because wanting to keep somewhat of a cap on that impact associated with transportation.
Okay.
If you start building this in one version of these plans, we maxed out the site of 500 residential units, or however many we can put on there, and determine that it's not probably a site that could accommodate that given the transportation impacts that you have to pay.
Okay. So I love this. Okay, I said that 2 weeks ago. So I think it's great if you're looking for direction. And so I would be supportive of what your requested action is. So.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you. That's where we start off.
Could the city have any say in what these apartments look like?
You can certainly, I mean, you own the property, so you sell it. You could include restrictions in your purchase and sale agreement, actually have the development agreement component. The more sort of limitations or things that you try to be very prescriptive in the development agreement will reduce your potential pool of purchasers. Having said that, I think you have design guidelines now that would apply, and your code, of course, would apply to development. So, yeah, you do have the ability, even if you don't own the land, you can do it through your regulatory authority in terms of what the building, the type of materials that it looks like, or the general design.
My comment there is that I'd like to see something that is that looks good as well as it provides a good rental space for people. I look at some of these businesses on 196 and Woodenville on the corner. Well, they look like great big shared buildings. They're not terrible looking, not bad. They've done a good job of making a square box look like something a little more.
Sure, and buildings have different modulations and different landscaping and open space. All that sort of gets added into the cost of the development, so you have to have a balance.
I just like to see something that's aesthetically good looking or that would draw people instead of saying, oh, no, it's not good. I'm sorry, one more question. With this site plan, we're not talking about anything we talked about last time at the other end of town?
Not with this site plan. So actually, Mr. Swanson and I talked about some of the things that Rich mentioned earlier, which is what do we do in the future, and that's Vision 2050, right, which is where do you then allow additional retail, residential space to go, not just here, but we're also talking about further on the east end of town and some other kind of older retail locations that we've got. So those will be coming back to you, but probably not for another 2 years. Okay. And we'll have that bigger picture discussion.
Okay.
I just wanted to follow up with Councilmember Scarborough's comment about the design standards, because we do have design guidelines for commercial, but how does that apply for residential there?
So that's something that we'd have to look at, and just to kind of clarify those previous bullet points, is the environmental is essentially going to happen in two stages. So you have the CEQA environmental review that goes along with the code measure required at the time. The big one in that is obviously going to be traffic.
Right.
Because even under our recently adopted comprehensive plan, that area was commercial, and that's what we did our traffic counts for. So we're getting some numbers from traffic consultants to come in and take a look at it and see the impacts on it. So that would be the phase one. Phase two will be going into that programmatic EIS and then cracking open those North Kelsey design guidelines and then incorporating some of that multifamily design guidelines in there, because we're essentially going to have to redo that. I don't want to say fully redo that programmatic EIS, because we have a lot of the existing environmental conditions from last time we did it. So it's just incorporating that, possibly updating some of it, and then including that that residential component in there.
Okay, all right.
All right, so I have heard support for the direction we can in number two and number three in the agenda bill. We don't need a motion. Is there any objection to me directing item number two and number three in the request action from the council members?
No.
Okay, seeing none, I'm understanding that we will direct the Planning Commission to evaluate amending the municipal code to allow multifamily residential and North Kelsey planning area, and also direct staff to prepare the necessary checklist and consultant contracts to evaluate the proposed zoning changes to implement the revised North Kelsey site plan. Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, the next item we have on our agenda this evening is discussion item number two, and that is That is AD-084 Municipal Campus Plan, Public Workshop to Design and Build Project with Mr. Roberts.
Rest up this morning.
Did you ever find that?
Someone that's on the work team, yeah, the basket got stolen in digital picking.
Yes, and where was the umbrella that they bought? Because I was sure I pulled that thing up.
I have no idea. So,
you have some sharp eyed children. I think they need to be, you know, lying to them.
Your secret identity is how long is it?
I want the beat coming, so
that was nice.
Go for it. All right, Robert, sorry, I got distracted. I was focusing on that. Let's get anything else.
No, we got to find you.
So, good evening, everyone. I'm here to speak about the Municipal Campus Plan Phase 2 and the public workshops. Just kind of give you a little bit of background. In 2016, Phase 2 of the Municipal Campus Plan was undertaken by the Council and staff. Council authorized the issuance of bonds in an effort to take advantage of what were historically low interest rates. The bonds were intended to support the construction of the public works shop, as well as one stormwater project, which has to do with Blueberry Lane, not to be confused with the Blueberry Lane Kelsey traffic situation going on there. This is further back, Blueberry Lane, closer to King Street. If any of you are familiar with it, it floods there.
The one that floods all the time.
The one that floods all the time. Yeah. Right? And the stormwater project in the area that just probably everyone's aware of. So, in 2017, we signed a contract with a design build firm, ET Environmental, and ET Environmental put together a cost estimate based on 20 years of historical data in doing construction in the Seattle area. They came up with a guaranteed maximum price estimate at that point in time of $4.6 million. As you are probably aware from some of the conversations public works staff have had with you in other situations, the construction market here in Seattle is ridiculous. It's just really hot. There's a lot of competition, and there really aren't enough carpenters and tin vendors and plumbers and electricians available. So the current cost of the building, guaranteed maximum price that ET Environmental submitted, was $5.8 million and such. It's a pretty significant difference there. The policy decision for council to discuss tonight is how to proceed from here. So, current status of the project. The facility design is complete. Permits for the site foundation and also the civil work are in hand for the design builder. And response to the first round of comments has been received by the design builder and is coming back to the city review first round talk. So I would expect to have a building permit in hand within the next couple of weeks. So, moving on. This project is a little bit different than most construction projects in being a design build and having a guaranteed maximum price. Construction design build comes with a price ceiling, so that's the GMP as it's called. And that price ceiling offers a firm finish line. So unlike many of your public works contracts where the contractor comes in, bids low, and then attempts to make profit on extras where there are maybe flaws in the design or maybe potential oversights in the spec book, that's not the case here. They give you a firm price up front and you meet that. When there are change orders in a GMP type project, they're typically brought forth by the city or the owner. So that's a more typical situation. The one exception to that is an unforeseen condition. So let's say the contractor goes out and digs up an old gas station that's underground in our backyard, which isn't there, but say that happened. That's where you'd run into potential for change orders. So it's pretty limited in this case. So as we move forward, if council elects to move forward with the project anyway, it'd be a big step in completing phase two of the municipal campus plan. The next kind of moves after that would include the construction of the shop, of course, and then the consolidation of city operations. So as Public Works moves into the new structure, Parks moves into some spaces that Public Works vacates, the police move into some spaces that Public Works vacates, and we become a more efficient operation overall. And then moving into phase three, if we were to do that, complete phase two, the next step for us would be to do a facility study in 2019 and then determine what options we want to pursue for phase three. So let's stop there. Are there any questions?
No.
Another thing I said there?
Just questions about the guaranteed maximum.
Sure.
Right. Have we done that before here?
We have not. In fact, it's a pretty limited. Well,
we sort of did.
We did.
Did it what?
So we have.
All the energy conservation projects that John brings before you for the wastewater treatment plant, those are all design build. We've got the energy maximum price.
Oh, okay.
The wastewater treatment plant, they've got, equipment and other fixtures and things like that. So those are done with the GMP.
So you're saying for the fixtures that they bring in, put in, that's done by a guaranteed
amount? Yeah, they say it's going to cost you this much. If we can figure out how to do it cheaper, it may come in cheaper, but it won't go over that unless you say you want more stuff.
But have we built a whole building?
No, we have not.
Oh, that was my question, that we haven't done a full construction project with the guaranteed maximum price. So.
So Brett is correct. It's actually a different statute in RCW, the wastewater treatment plant projects, than this statute. And this is a really unique statute that allows for the construction of a pre-engineered metal building, which this is, and it has some very specific parameters about when a city of our type and size can do that. Okay. And so this is the first project we've had which actually fell into those parameters where it was legally allowed.
So what's the rationale of doing it this way?
It tends to save on design costs, which I think is fair to say that it did in this case. We did the design so that the design costs were less than 10%, about 450,000 or so, a few dollars kind of floating out there. And the overall construction cost is $5.8 million. That's a pretty good savings in design costs. Speed and efficiency of the project. When you develop a relationship with a design builder, you're working with one group of consultants and staff members throughout the entire project. So as we start together, we kind of share a vision and then we work together. So it's not like we're working with an architect who then designs something, a structural engineer who then engineers something, and then we go to bid with a contractor where we now have to translate that vision from A to B to C. It is simply the same group that we work with all the way through.
Okay.
So.
And so I was reading in here with the, it goes under the cost, the city pays 30% of that back to the company and 70% to the, comes back to the city.
Yes, that's correct.
So, do you need some?
No. We're waiting. Thank you.
So, what's the incentive for them to save costs and actually come in under the 5.8?
That is the incentive. It's money without any work. So if they're able to find cost savings throughout the construction project, so let's just say they find a way to save us $100,000 in concrete costs.
Right.
They get 30% of that. And so there's their incentive. We save $70,000 because of their means and methods.
But not finding that incentive, they're going to get the 5.8.
It's the maximum price. It's not the minimum. So the cost, it's not a price floor, it's a price ceiling only.
Right.
So the cost is direct cost plus a fee. So it's direct cost plus 5.75% of the cost of the project with a maximum price of 5.8 million.
Right.
So if it comes in at 4.2, they get 5.75% of 4.2.
And so what control does the city have on, so I have limited experience with construction, but I've been through a couple of projects where they will recommend, a higher, let's just say a toilet, that actually costs more, so they get up to that maximum price of the 5.8 million by the products and the things that they're using versus they could have saved 100,000.
Sure, but if let's just use 100,000 because it's a nice round number, right?
Yeah.
Would you rather have 5.75% of 100,000 or 30? So from their incentive is our incentive.
Okay.
We have an aligned incentive, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It's a greater profit for less work.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's one of those you have to kind of live in it for a little bit to make it make sense, but it is a win-win. I think that this is something that I've learned a little bit from Devlin over the school district about. It's a real common method of construction in that because the school district's rules and regs are much broader for this sort of thing. And I've talked to him about this extensively, and he kind of explained it to me that way. He just used 10 as a number. And what?
Well, their projects are probably a lot bigger.
Overall, sure.
So I can understand the rationale of having a maximum price on when you have a $50 million building.
Yeah.
But
well, plus the number of projects they're doing and then the management oversight is it's far less.
Yeah.
It's a real, it's a different way to do a project, but I feel like I said, it's more collaborative, and it, I think it provides a better finished product than it's done. It's a speedier delivery.
Yes, yes.
Another potential pro to doing it this way too, by having that maximum cost, especially in a hot market, and also if you look at the macro environment where potential cost of materials continue to increase, at this point you've locked in the price. Because I, in prior lives, I dealt with some larger construction projects where we ended up getting change orders because it was a hot construction market, where the cost of steel or the cost of concrete ended up requiring a change order, and the prices just kept escalating, where the design didn't change at all. So, you know, there's pros and cons doing it this way, but in my mind, from a finance standpoint, I like the pro of we've got a guaranteed price. So now, if the price of the different components change, and usually they change to go up, that's not going to affect us.
And so you were saying this is regulated by ordinance, because normally we have to go out to bid for a project, so this is...
That's correct, yes. So there are some specific parameters in RCW, RCW that allow for this specific type of project to occur in these specific circumstances. And so it really keys on a pre-engineered metal building, a city of our type, and then the total cost of the project. It has actually a minimum and a maximum. So it's a really uniquely written portion of the law, and I would say a very well-lobbied one.
Okay. Any other questions at this time? Mr. Roberts, just a minute.
Okay, so now I've run through the alternatives. I think I'm going to hit you with the world's shortest possible PowerPoint. One slide.
Yeah.
There you go. So, I thought I'd run through these alternatives. Obviously, the financial portion of it right here. I'm going to just kind of read off of each one. These are a little bit confusing because they do interplay with one another. I'll stop after each one. If you have something to add or a question to ask, please do so at that point in time. So, option one is to move forward with the $5.8 million GMP, construct a public works shop, and then use the remaining cash, around $560,000, for the Blueberry Lane stormwater system improvement design, and then further identify potential funding sources for the remaining $1.2 million needed to complete construction of the Blueberry Lane stormwater system improvements. Funding would need to be procured in 2018 if we were to do this, most likely through additional debt service. Additional debt service coverage is going to require a stormwater rate increase. So that's option one. Are there any questions about option one?
Which slide do I need to come up with that?
Maybe just that right here. Option two is to move forward with the $5.8 million GMP, construct the shop. The remaining bond revenues, being the same, would be used for design of Blueberry Lane stormwater system improvements. Once that design is complete, construction would be deferred until adequate rate revenues or other revenues are collected. So, any questions on option two?
Ms. Lane, can you give a recommendation? The staff have a recommendation as we're going through these?
Yeah. I believe the staff recommendation is option two.
That's correct.
Okay.
Option three would be to terminate the contract with ET Environmental. That would cost us a dollar, and we would keep the plans. Advertise a public workshop construction project for competitive bids on the open market. This would incur additional design and bid processing costs estimated at $75,000. Completion of Blueberry Lane stormwater system improvements would be contingent upon whatever were to come of the bid. We talked about the hot construction market. Staff would not advise doing this at this point in time. Option four, do not build the public workshop and use the bond proceeds for Blueberry Lane and other stormwater capital improvements as identified in our storm system plan. That's an option for us. However, it's fairly unlikely that staff can complete design, acquire the necessary permits, and get all the environmental approvals needed by December 15, 2019, which is when the bonds would need to be, is that refunded? Is that the proper terminology, Becky?
So anytime you purchase bonds to maintain your tax-exempt status, you have to expend the bonds for the stated purpose within 36 months of receiving the cash, so the deadline would be December 2019.
Okay, so then option five would be to construct the Blueberry Lane stormwater improvements with $1.7 million and use the remaining funds for the public workshop using a phased approach. This would incur additional planning, design, and staff costs estimated at around $175,000 to reconfigure the shop and also ultimately it'll provide a facility that doesn't meet departmental needs. And kind of to backtrack on that, the reason that is that staff and UT have worked together pretty heavily to value engineer this facility. So we've gone as far as looking at eliminating floor coverings entirely and going with just concrete to the level of downgrading ceiling tiles to a less expensive version, because it saved us, you know, $3,000 to $5,000. We've got kind of the nitty gritty here. I think that cutting any less is going to be really, really difficult. So,
Councilor Hanford. I'll take option number two for $6 million, please. So, can you briefly explain why the preferred option is option number two?
The preferred option being option number two is because it, frankly, is the best of these. We have an obligation to expend bond funds, or it's going to cost us, as Becky says. And it does allow us to proceed with Blueberry Lane, and it does allow us to proceed with the shop. So we don't have any sunken cost in the shop. We don't lose our investment there.
Okay. And Ms. Hauser, have you heard the term defeats for defeats and bonds? Is that an option that the city has in this?
Not necessarily. Again, because I actually called and talked to bond council about this, you know, what happens if we don't meet the deadline?
Right.
Because of the construction market, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, no, that's bad idea. Again, it gets back to the tax exempt status. There would be various penalties and interest involved if we can't go that far. The other problem, too, now is with the new tax laws that were passed at the national level. There are certain options we no longer have available to us with regards to municipal bonds, and that can take a whole other second session to talk about all that kind of details. So we're somewhat limited on that. So it's just best to be able to extend these businesses.
So you have to completely extend them, or do you have to just show that the construction is moving forward and you're going to be spending it?
You're supposed to completely extend them by that time. That's why 36 months after taking the bonds versus like a year or whatever. So most people do get construction substantially complete by then. I mean, she said if you're within $5,000 to $10,000 or something like that, they don't worry about that too much. But yeah, no, it's not meant to, okay, we're putting construction out at month 30 and then maybe get it done over the next year. What they're trying to do is have the timing closer to you're not taking the cash until you actually really need it.
And then I had a question about the design of Blueberry and is there any downside to, I think I asked this last time you came, when you mentioned about putting that kind of on hold knowing we need the design first. Is there any downside to having the design and not completing the project? The design likely change down the road? Is the timing, is there any downside to putting that on hold?
There's potential downside, sure. There are potential downside that regulations may change, and so the design that we have produced at this point in time might need to be upgraded if regulations become more restricting.
Okay.
So, and PDES comes up at the end of 2019, I believe, so we would have a period of time there. So.
When you said it comes up in 2019, what do you mean?
I mean, our MPDS permit, which dictates how stormwater facilities handle or manage the outputs of stormwater that go into them. It is up for the permit renewal. Excuse me.
So designs can change at that time, probably.
There's some potential. However, I don't think the city would have to be put in a position where it would have to adopt the upgraded manual for a period of time after the permit passes. So
okay.
I'm literally thinking out loud here.
No, I appreciate that.
So, yeah.
I was just asking the question.
Yeah, I was trying to think it outside. So, yeah.
Okay. And there's no, with the water cooling and all that, there's no, I'm not familiar with where that is. You were saying you knew exactly where it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just on Ben past the apartment complex.
Morning Run.
Right.
Yeah. It's near Blueberry Children's Park. Morning Run are on the north side, and then on the other side you've got.
Right. There's always a police car roadblock sign.
Okay. So no, I mean, what's the time frame? I mean, we obviously would have to come up with some additional funding to get it done. Any thought on time frame to do that?
Our stormwater system plan has us coming back for bonds. Brad, I need you to fill in a little bit here.
They actually, the building, the pond, the
plans to issue $6 million of the bonds for the stormwater system.
Gotcha.
So it's already in the plan, and we just have to sell it again. And we just took this amount because we figured that's how much work we could do, and we promised not to issue more debt.
I think that's correct.
For at least 2 years, which is up at the end of this year. Because I recall asking that question, we had to say, no, we have no plans to issue more debts for the next 2 years. So we will be able to issue more bonds at the beginning of next year.
And we have a lot of complaints from residents who live over in that area about that flooding and cooling, and how long has that been going on and all of that?
Over 20 years?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of complaints.
Yeah. Looking at, you know, what's the more pressing, more important to get done with what residents who pay taxes might want. So just trying to consider that.
Thank you. Councilmember Ms. Knight?
I was just going to add on the stormwater issue. I think one of the fundamental problems, I mean, if you recall the council meeting in the last couple of months, we had to defer some stormwater projects, and that's been hard because we need to come back and take a look at your stormwater utility rates. But there was currently not sufficient to do the project in addition to potentially borrowing and paying off those bonds. Just want to keep that in mind when we're talking about your stormwater funding.
But in order to do then this project, we have to look at increasing those rates or using this money to do the project versus the public works building.
You're still going to be challenged, too, if you're able to do this project. You're going to have to pay then off that portion of the bond that this project is doing. And again, you're going to be short your stormwater funds in coming years.
And if I may expand on that, if you end up, say, considering option four, where you use the whole $6 million for the stormwater, then you're also going to be increasing debt service requirements on the stormwater. So you're going to still be in a position where you're going to have to look at the rates. Because right now, with the way the bond is structured, it was also spread out among all the utilities, and the general fund and the street fund has various users of a new shop that was being built with a certain amount for the Blueberry Lane stormwater project. Of course, that formula is going to have to be recalculated now if we end up going with options one or two. Option four, as I said, that takes all that the other utilities would be paying and putting that burden on the stormwater utility, which, as we know right now, really couldn't take it.
So I think that another pertinent piece of information on the line of question you're asking is, in talking with Design Construction Manager Scott Peterson today, just to kind of firm up what this would look like if this did come up, was he felt as though if council moved forward with option two or one of the options that allows for design, that he could have a consultant on board and have design completed at the latest by February of 2019. So if, in fact, a rate increase or some other form of funding is something that the council wants to look at, that buys a fair amount of time in order to facilitate that process. So, and that's just the design portion. So it would still be progressing.
Councilor Campbell.
Yeah, I know what you fell over. So, yeah, I understand the impact of the Blueberry and the other stormwater projects. What impact is there if we didn't construct the shop? Or is there anything?
An impact to what? So there's a potential financial and credit rating adverse impact, a portion of it, depending on how that worked out. This is a little bit messy. The other portion of it is that when the council decided to move forward with the campus plan, this shop project sets off a series of movements on campus that facilitate consolidation and efficiency in the operations, really, of the city as a whole.
So this is the initiator, because once that's completed, then as each unit gets rebuilt, they move into the shop area?
Well, what really happens, I don't know if you're here tonight, we walked out to the shop out there. Essentially, 20,000 square feet of stuff goes that way, and then 20,000 square feet of stuff comes this way. Right. So the police department moves into that space that we were, that kind of open area back there. Right. The Triple C, the coordination center, goes into the new shop. Those trailers go away. Mm-hmm. The parking moves in. I mean, this is the keystone of a large arch. And so if this doesn't happen, we wait.
In that case, because we've talked about destruction for the new campus for years, and probably, I think option two is probably our best option on this. We're going to have stormwater projects forever. And I would love to see this get fixed, but
so would I.
If this were the initiator, I think that we would be more aware. So my preference would be option two.
Are there any other questions? Mr. Roberts, do you have anything further?
No, sir.
Yes,
I do not.
Okay. Is there any objection to proceeding with option two, which I've heard 10 council members express interest in? Councilmember Heather?
Are we doing a motion?
Not doing a motion, just asking if there's any objection to a study session. I'm just asking if there's...
Yeah, it'll be presented to final action, it'll be brought back for action.
On the 17th.
Yeah, so I'll hold my comments to that.
Okay, so we're going to bring back number two on the 17th, exactly.
We're going to bring back the entire package with option two as the recommended.
Gotcha, that's why this was written for that.
And if it helps, one of the things that is on our work plan, collaboratively between finance and public works, is to take a longer look approach with regards to our capital needs and the financing associated with that for our utilities, just as we're going to do with the general fund, that will include strategies about when and if we want to do bonding. That's part of why we're also looking at adopting a formal debt policy this year as well. So understanding that, I think Councilmember Camp said it, you're always going to have various capital projects associated with your utilities. We want to be more strategic about when we issue that debt for a number of different reasons. What kind of impact is the debt service going to have on potential rates? What projects can we realistically get done with existing stock levels? And then also, you know, timing of the bonds, since you've got to be able to expend the proceeds within the 36 months. So we are working on that this year as well.
Okay, so I just, again, the study session format's kind of a new piece. I've got two council members indicating a preference or option two. Is there anybody that's like definitely, except for maybe one, is there anybody else that's definitely not loving number two? Because otherwise, I want to make certain the staff can work for that.
Loving number two? No. Willing to accept number two?
Let's go with that. Is there anybody else willing to accept number two? Or with a strong preference for another one, that's probably what I should have.
So
that's the better approach. Okay, staff will come forward with the option number two for council's consideration. Again, even those people that express support for it tonight, you can do something different when it comes forward. I just want to make sure we're not spinning our wheels if there's a strong preference for something. Thank you, everybody. Sorry, can you come to the seat? Okay, I see nothing further than this evening. Mr. Roberts, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
May be adjourned.
We have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Danford, with that second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Saying none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.